Route 66. When it was built 75 years ago, no one thought it would become America's most famous road. And when it was finally replaced by freeways in 1984, few imagined people coming from around the world to visit and drive it. Route 66 is a road for dreams and dreamers. The dreams pass each other in the night along the hard road which was once Route 66. This program is about those dreams and the struggles of all those headed west for California, across the mountains and desert.
There's a very dramatic change in the region as we head out into those canyons.
Michael Wallace, author of Route 66, The Mother Road.
And the sky is opening up. That's the part of the trip that starts getting to people who have never seen it before. This big sky with those Old Testament clouds, and you're headed down into those canyons and the cattle, and you move towards the borders of New Mexico. Next great dramatic change is when you first start seeing those mountains appear up to the north. And that's all part of the Route 66 experience, all through New Mexico.
At the edge of the Great Plains, as 66 crosses into New Mexico from Texas, the road ascends to the Continental Divide. The terrain is open and windy, with mesas rising starkly from the high desert floor. A glance out the car window reminds us we're not in Kansas anymore.
Oh, this desert makes me homesick, riding shotgun all the way. The open land just seems to stretch forever, reaching to eternity. But I don't like your wire fences, and I don't like your old wives' dogs. I don't like the way you keep me out with your dusty desert laws. Barbed wire, it's just a sin. It locks me out, but also locks you in.
Midway between Amarillo and Albuquerque, the first town we find is Tucumcari, once called Six Shooter Siding. This was as far west as the Chicago and Rock Island Railroad reached before being overtaken by the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe, heading east. When Route 66 opened in 1926, Tucumcari became a port of entry to the mountainous west.
We've always been going west.
Richard Edelaine teaches Western history at the University of New Mexico.
Whether they were trails, whether they were railroads, whether they were tourist encounters, they have all given us a sense of moving from back there to out here.
For millions, the sign, Tucumcari Tonight, reminds them of their first stop in the land of enchantment, New Mexico. And for many, the first shop was a curio house, owned by the Callens family for decades.
We're kind of known as the last of the old Route 66 curio stores left in eastern New Mexico. This is really the first of the sterling and turquoise that they do see. We put a lot of steer heads and antlers and Indian mannequins up that they get a good feel that they're coming into the Indian country.
Next door at the auto parts store, we found Bobby Brown, who began a long career driving Route 66. Today, he teaches in a truck driving school off old Route 66.
Bear in mind that if you can't see the driver in the mirror, he can't see you. That's blind spots the driver has. That means that he's liable to pull over in front of you. He can't see you. So you don't just get beside one and hang. You either go on around him or slow down.
Brown's school has added new courses for a new generation of drivers since Route 66 began.
We teach defensive driving, and we have added road rage to our class. Because one of these, you can get mad and wipe a car out and never even have to stop. You have people pull right in front of these trucks, and you can't even see them, and it scares you. And pretty soon it starts building up. That's when it's time to go to the coffee shop. Get out of the truck.
From Tucumcari, today, the way west passes straight as an arrow along the 35th parallel. Originally, Route 66 went north from Santa Rosa to Santa Fe, a tourist destination and arts colony. Santa Rosa remained a sleepy roadside town whose most famous resident was Rudolfo Anaya, author of more than a dozen books on the Southwest. The New York Times has called Anaya the most widely read Hispanic author in the U.S., but once, he was a little dark-haired boy watching cars whiz by on Route 66.
I grew up the length of two city blocks from Route 66.
Rudolfo Anaya.
On Route 66, right after World War II, people were moving west. One afternoon at a gas station, where we went to fill our bike tires after goat head punctures, a car stopped. Dad, mom, son and daughter, blue-eyed gringos from the east. They usually didn't pay attention to the brown Mexicanitos gathered at the gas station, but this Aussie and Harriet Nelson did. "Where are you from?" Aussie asked. "Here," I said. "Just here?" he said, looking around. "Yes." I had never considered any place other than just here. Here was home. "Oh," he said, and went off to kick his car's tires. "Where are you from?" I asked Harriet. "Back east." "Where are you going?" I asked. "We're tourists," she answered. "We're going to California." Imagine, I thought to myself. A family can travel to California as tourists? Just to go look? I ran home and told my mother, "Mama, I want to be a tourist." Her mouth dropped. She stopped rolling tortillas and made the sign of the cross over me. "Where did you get that idea?" I told her about the family I had just met. "No, mijito," she said. "Only the Americanos can be tourists. Now go help Ultima with her herbs."
As a teenager in the 1950s, Anaya moved down 66 to Albuquerque, the only city on Route 66 between Texas and California. Albuquerque sits in the valley of the Big River, El Rio Grande. Here, the Camino Real met the old wagon trails to the Pacific.
A-L-B-U-Q-U-E-R-Q, Albuquerque, Albuquerque.
Gotta go back to New Mexico, where my true love waits for me. Gonna go to a gal that I know,
in A-L-B-U-Q-U-E-R-Q-U-E.
Here the water was shallow enough for the horses to ford and to drink. Wool wagons creaked down Railroad Avenue from far-off reservations where sheep dominate the horizon. Here, the Route 66 tourist found a neon extravaganza at auto courts like the Buckaroo or the Palomino, La Mesa, or El Vado. Here, drivers might wonder if they'd taken a wrong turn and landed in Old Mexico. Under the cottonwoods on the Rio Grande, doves coo and the reverend sit in the shade of churches made cool by thick adobe walls. In New Mexico, a potluck brings together cultures. Indians have pozole, a dish of corn and mutton. Anglos lay out smoked meats from the barbecue. Hispanics bring sopapillas, puffy triangles of fried dough. They all add a ladle of hot chili pepper, red or green. Such innocent feasts contain clues to life in the 21st century United States. New Mexico is the first of many majority-minority states where European Americans or Anglos are outnumbered. Is the U.S. destined to be a nation at war with itself as the barely stirred melting pot boils over? Or will we bridge our differences as gracefully as they do around the potluck table? In Albuquerque, many an adventurer plotted his course. Juan de Oñate, hunting for gold, invading Texas armies, and one bold lieutenant, Edward Beale. He fought with General Kearney in the Mexican-American War, and then his country asked him to find a way to the Pacific, some way to join the old Fort Smith wagon road and California.
Beale was in the Army, and he came west in 1857 to basically build a road to the gold fields of California.
Michael Amundson at Northern Arizona University.
It was basically across present-day Arizona, along Route 66 and along what is today I-40.
Beale was not easily discouraged, not by crossing high peaks, nor by the vast Mojave Desert, nor by the Pai, Navajo, Hopi, or the other tribes he crossed. He did have one request which sent his superiors into fits of laughter until they realized he was serious.
As he was going to explore from the Great Plains of New Mexico and across Arizona, he brought with him camels, animals that could withstand the great American desert.
In 1857, he set out from Albuquerque with his men and 13 Arabian camels, packed with 700 to 1,000 pounds each, five times as much as a mule could carry.
This is Beale's report from September 21st, 1857, describing the camels. My admiration for the camels increases daily. They pack water for others 4 days under hot sun and never get a drop. They pack heavy burdens of corn and oats for months and never get a grain. And on the bitter greasewood and other worthless shrubs not only subsist, but keep fat.
Beale's camels went missing. Some say they're still out there. Route 66's most endangered species.
Apparently they did release a lot of these, and there are lots of reports of camel sightings into the late 19th century of people seeing these camels out in the boonies.
Route 66 followed the camel trail west, skirting the mountains. The road crossed the tracks to Gallup via the main street of the Laguna Pueblo and Grants, New Mexico.
I'm a road runner, honey.
Beep, beep. The Southwest has always been the most exotic stretch of Route 66, and it's most rugged. Hundreds of miles separated gas stations. Water bags bounced against car radiators. Every few miles brought the driver through another reservation. After a few days' drive, the cliffs took on a life of their own, with escarpments shaped like animals or warriors' faces. Before reaching Gallup, the sky city of Acoma rises in the distance. Poet Simon Ortiz is the tribe of Acoma's translator. He remembers the sounds on Route 66 in the 1940s when he grew up.
My father was a singer. He liked music, singing, so he would sing like railroad kind of songs, folk songs from Jimmy Rogers, American folk songs, set into the context of the Acoma cultural life. And then the railroad which rumbles east and west constantly north of my mother's house, rattling, shaking the windows, but always the silence that connotes distance and is something inner as a constant motion that was taking place.
Gallup, in the heart of the Indian country, is home to dozens of Indian jewelry shops. It also hosts the Intertribal Ceremonial, the largest pan-Indian gathering in the world. For years, Hollywood film used the town as a backlot. Film stars like Jimmy Stewart and Mae West mounted horses and bunked at the El Rancho. Today's visitors may be from Holland or Germany, as part of the growing Route 66 craze in those countries. Rose Alzendiel teaches American studies at the University of Amsterdam.
The U.S. image is an open road, open-ended, of lost communities, of going through. To Europeans, what makes America America is the vast territory. That is the image of the West that has dominated a lot of Hollywood films. So the road through that Western territory is what makes America. And Route 66 has become a kind of pilgrimage for us to experience the American experience.
When it's twilight on the trail and I jog along, the world is like a dream and the ripple of the stream is my song.
Michael Wallace, author of Route 66, The Mother Road.
People are awestruck from Brussels or Paris or Luxembourg when all of a sudden they see this sky and they truly understand what it's all about when you first start seeing those mountains appear.
Not all Europeans are thrilled by Route 66. Frans Verhagen, publisher of America magazine in Holland.
The northern part, there's not much to see. And the southern part, yeah, well, what shall I say? There are more interesting things to see in the southwest, I think, than pieces of a road that's broken down. Route 66 doesn't have much appeal to me, I must say.
Get your kicks on what's left. 66.
I'm in an auto camp on Route 66, just west of Gallup, New Mexico.
The romance Route 66 offers visitors is the result of its many portrayals on television and radio. Here's one early example, produced by CBS Radio in 1946. In The Hitchhiker, Orson Welles feels the weight of all the miles left to reach California.
Outside, it's night. The vast, soulless night of New Mexico. A million stars are in the sky. Ahead of me stretch 1,000 miles of empty mesa. Mountains. Prairies. Desert.
Past Fort Defiance and Holbrook, the road winds around until travelers reach Winslow. Michael Amundson, a historian of the West.
As automobiles are more and more popular, the Harvey Company picks up on this with what they start as the Indian detours. People would get off the train and they could go on these 1 to 2 day trips with a woman guide who was their detourist.
Al Richmond.
People came to know the Southwest through the railroads. And the Santa Fe in particular really brought the Indian tribes to fore. Indian detours where you could stop off in Albuquerque or in Winslow and get in motor cars or motor buses and travel out in the Indian reservations.
La Posada, the last Harvey house, was built here in 1912 and designed by Mary Coulter. Alan Affeld, an architect from Southern California, bought and remodeled the hotel 5 years ago.
When you entered the building from the south, from the railroad tracks, because you'd probably arrive by train or by Route 66, you'd come into a couple thousand square foot lobby. There's four huge columns and a beautiful plastered ceiling. But you can imagine what it was like in the 1930s here when the Depression had hit and all these really struggling people were going down Route 66 in cars that they could barely afford fuel for, driving past this huge Spanish castle.
Across the tracks from La Posada and Winslow was one of the stranger communities on Route 66, an Indian tribe living in boxcars. The Santa Fe Railroad gave jobs to the Laguna Pueblo, but they didn't tell them about their housing. Mary Toya was born in a boxcar on Route 66 in the 1930s. Today, she's visiting the site of Boxcar Village with her daughter, Deborah.
The Kiva house was probably right here where that little hill is. I think what they did is cut the boxcar in half and put it together.
Okay, and what like was this I here?
Said, this was a council hall.
Is this where they had the dances?
Yeah, at the night dances. Yeah. Goes right
this
over
is
there.
Where I saw my first
Kachina
Indian
dance.
Next door to Indian Camp lived a colony of Japanese Americans. They weren't there for the sun and the clean, dry air. They worked on the railroad until the day the army trucks came and took them away.
But I know we were having our religious ceremonies when those army canvas trucks are coming. Let's haul them in.
The Laguna moved into the barracks the Japanese left behind. It took the internment of Japanese to get indoor plumbing for Laguna.
My grandfather sacrificed his living amongst his community to be here. And whenever I would come with my mother to pick my grandfather up from work, you could see him.
Deborah Holland Toya is a writer and graduate student at UCLA. She remembers the pain and isolation that came from living far from home and family.
You could see him coming across the tracks with his jacket slung over his back, and he always had a black lunchbox that he would let me take, and there was always something left inside from his lunch because he knew I would be there to pick him up.
Eventually, the Laguna made the boxcar village their own.
The most important thing about this Indian camp was the fact that the community moved here together. Nobody was alone.
Fancy hotels for the tourists, and across the tracks, boxcars for the Indians. Route 66 always was a study in contrasts.
Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona.
From Winslow, the road climbs into the world's largest forest of ponderosa pines, tall, majestic trees smelling of vanilla. Logging, sheep herding, and mining were industries driven by the railroad's arrival. The railroads divided communities even as it linked them to the world. When Route 66 was built in 1926, it hugged the rails in Flagstaff, a stone's throw away from the tracks. Together, road and rail bisected 66 towns, north and south.
The tracks separated people. As much as it brought and moved people around the country, it also served as a cultural dividing line.
Michael Amundson and Richard Mangum live in Flagstaff.
Well, the railroad was here first, so it's not as if it cut an existing town. But in every railroad town, there's a good side of the tracks and a bad side of the tracks.
A poor side and a rich side of town. A colored side and a white one. Where does the expression across the tracks come from? Michael Amundson, Arizona historian.
Certainly one of the things that the railroad does is it divides populations. And across the tracks is somehow a lesser, it's the other in American society. Across the tracks, south of the tracks in Flagstaff, was the African American population. The Chicano community in Flagstaff was also located across the tracks.
When you got away from the track out here, it meant a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, I live across the track. It was across the track, and I never liked that word, living across the track, down by the track, because that train was loud coming through.
Crossing the tracks in small cities like Flagstaff is not easy. 80 trains cross Flagstaff every day, splitting the city. When Amtrak pulls in for 20 minutes, the town has an iron curtain. No one can cross. Traffic freezes.
There are several crossings there. There are some people that just really find this totally disconcerting and disruptive.
Al Richmond, rail historian at Northern Arizona University.
So I look at trains a little bit differently. I like to sit at a railroad crossing, and I count the number of 80,000-pound trucks that are no longer out on the highway trying to kill me, no longer tearing up the highways that I pay for.
Outside of town and just north of 66, we cross Route 66's Camel Trail to meet Michael Amundson, Arizona historian.
15 miles west of Flagstaff. And we're at the base of Government Hill on the Beale Road, which was cut in 1857 from New Mexico to California. You can just imagine walking through this forest at 7,000, almost 8,000 feet in elevation and coming across a caravan of camels with soldiers wearing pre-Civil War wool suits. And so you can imagine we're here July 5th, and it's about 75 degrees. You can imagine what that would be like in wool trousers, a wool shirt, and a wool tunic on top of a camel.
Nearby in Williams, Arizona, is the Grand Canyon Railway linking Route 66 and one of America's most spectacular attractions. Its antique carriages with armchairs and dome cars draw 175,000 tourists per year. They don't ride to get to the canyon faster, but to get there in style. Max Biegert bought and restored the line in 1989, spending 2 years and nearly $5 million.
The railroad came along in late 80s, and it was a loan gone bad, actually, is what happened. And had no intention of getting into it.
In the engine room of a steam engine, it's plenty hot. The engineers, who must follow the same rules and staffing of the big lines, have an old-fashioned oil can.
A lot of the engine is unchanged from the days of steam. We still manually oil the engine. There's a lot of valves and handles, and everything is still manually done. There's no automation on the engines. The worst-case scenario on a steam engine is a boiler explosion.
This engineer, dressed in bib overalls, seems completely in control.
When the water level is not maintained sufficiently, and that's the jobs of the engineer and fireman in the cab to make sure that water level is properly maintained, the boiler will explode.
Oh!
All aboard!
The Grand Canyon Railroad really saved the town of Williams before Route 66 tourism began. Williams had the last segment of Route 66 to be bypassed by the interstate back in 1984, and some people fought its closing to the bitter end, even with rifles.
Route 66 here flourished.
Mike is a part-time conductor on the line.
And they felt that if Route 66 were to be bypassed by the new Interstate 40, then in fact Williams would die. Folks took it upon themselves to position themselves on either side of town and actually fire at the bulldozers as they were trying to complete Interstate 40. The long rifle pinged off of many pieces of construction equipment out here.
This weekend, near Williams, Arizona, south of the Grand Canyon, the last 5 miles of Route 66 will be bypassed. It will be possible to drive from Chicago to Los Angeles without a stoplight.
Route 66 was truly the road that wouldn't die. No sooner did the 66 signs come down than people who lived along the road demanded that Arizona put them back up again. Angel Delgadillo, the barber of Seligman, practically camped out at the highway department in Phoenix to reestablish historic Route 66.
We had to go to the state. Much resistance. We couldn't get any help. They finally says, yes, we'll help to make historic from Kingman to Topak, Arizona. But it wasn't easy. You just don't give up. You just stay with it.
What brought people back to 66 was the chance to sample local America, the country their grandparents remember, to see the petrified forest, meteor crater, and ride a steam train, or climb down a cave like the Grand Canyon Caverns north of Seligman, Arizona, on the longest stretch where 66 separates from the interstate.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Grand Canyon Caverns. My name is Bill Jackson. We're going to take a 3/4 mile walk in here with uphills and downhills and uphills and downhills.
We are coming from the north of Germany. Today, I see, the famous old road. I said to my wife, we must go the Route 66.
Yo, lady!
West of the caverns, travelers pass through the Hualapai Reservation in Peach Springs. Few realize this is the site of Route 66's own Trail of Tears.
I was born here on the reservation, up here at a place where we call Blue Mountain. In Indian, we call it Wiknya.
Man Susan Yatame is the tribal historian of the Hualapai.
They took them all down there in 1875. By 76, they couldn't take it anymore, you know, because we're mountain people. So they just said, well, you know, we might as well die trying to get back. So they all escaped that area.
Before the Civil War, surveyors for the railroad passed through here. Then the U.S. Army arrived and removed the Hualapai.
The ranchers, you know, everybody moved in. They started taking the springs. We tried to hang on, but it was too much. The disease that they brought with them killed a lot of us.
The U.S. Supreme Court later declared this removal illegal, a high-handed endeavor to wrest from these Indians lands which Congress had never declared forfeited. It didn't help. The Mojave County supervisors declared the land vacant and invited ranchers to move in. Like the Chinese, they became cheap labor to build the railroad and later Route 66.